Well, good Monday evening. It certainly feels like late fall out there, and I'm very pleased to have in the studio this afternoon, this evening, Jay Rudisill, DNR fisheries biologist at the hatchery at Rathbun Lake, and also Philip Brown, operations manager for the Corps of Engineers at Rathbun Lake. Did I get that right, Philip?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Philip's a busy man. He's a great softball coach, been wonderful with our community in softball and a lot of other things, but it's always fun to talk to you about anything, fishing and the lake and softball, good knowledge. So tonight we're going to focus on the cooperation between the Corps of Engineers and the DNR and some of their efforts to keep fishing, walleye fishing in particular, sustainable. So where do you want to start? Talk about that barrier, or what do we need to hear tonight about fishing at the lake?
Let's start on the premise behind a lot of this stuff and the barrier and so forth. We got the Corps of Engineers has a program, what's referred to as the Continuing Authorities Program, and it's every year we have funding available where we can partner up with local sponsors, and this applies throughout the country. And in particular, one of the parts of that program is called 1135 program, is what we commonly refer to it as. And what we do is the Corps will look for a local sponsor, state, you know, Iowa Department of Natural Resources in this case, or it could be a county conservation board, even a municipality of some sort, to work on a 75-25 type cost share, where the government will fund 75% and the local sponsor has to come up with 25% of the funding, and or could be in-kind services to meet that 25% effort. And with that program, then, it's a great segue into doing many things. And again, the 1135 program in particular, what we've capitalized on at Rathbun Lake is over the years is shoreline stabilization projects where we've partnered up with DNR. We've also done wetland projects along the lake or up arms of the lake, again helping with water quality, but also providing habitat for the wildlife resources, fish wildlife resources. Sponsors for those could even be, in some cases, Rathbun Rural Water, Rathbun Land and Water Alliance, Iowa DNR. We've partnered up with Lucas County. They needed a roadway improved on an arm of the lake that crossed over an arm of the lake that was impacted by high water events. They couldn't afford to do it with their funding. So with that partnership, it was a three-way partnership. DNR wanted to improve wetland habitat in that area of the lake. The county needed a roadway, so we used the dam of that wetland project as the roadway. Rathbun Land and Water Alliance wanted water quality improvement for their purposes as a water supply, their connection to Rathbun Regional Water. And the Corps, you know, we're the funding. We can help with 75% of that. So things like that have gone on over the years, which leads to one of the other projects that you touched on, and we can talk about that a little bit more, is that fish barrier.
A lot of these things go on behind the scenes when most of us aren't aware of that beneficial cooperation between these groups. So that's really encouraging to hear. I know the Rathbun Land and Water Alliance has been a very productive group. So, Jay, as a fisheries biologist, your main concern is fishing quality and how that affects the hatchery. But one of the issues that's come up through the years is you lose a lot of the great game fish right out the spillway.
Yeah, that's right. walleyes are a predominant species in Rathbun Lake. We have 60,000 anglers that come to Rathbun Lake to fish for walleyes. And in doing so, they provide over $5 million to the local economy through, you know, lodging, gas, groceries, fishing tackle, and things like that. So it's a very important walleye population, not only for our local area, but for the state, because at Rathbun Hatchery, we produce walleyes from the brood stock from Rathbun Lake that get stocked in many other state lakes. And walleyes in Rathbun Lake, they tend to go out of the lake when discharges are high. Walleyes are a species that tend to go with the flow. All sizes of walleyes are susceptible to this, and we would like to be able to install a non-physical barrier to keep the walleyes that we work so hard on to produce and stock in the lake, keep them in the lake.
So what's proposed then? How in the world would you keep wildlife from exiting if they want to?
Well, we have we set up a experimentation system at Rathbun Hatchery, and we've tested two types of barriers. The first type of barrier that we tested was a sound bubble light barrier, and so there was a combination of three technologies there. One was a bubble curtain right in front of the outlet. There was also sound that was produced and projected into the water, and then there was different light schemes. I think sometimes it was constant and sometimes it was strobe effect.
Did you play rock and roll with that? Did that?
No, we did not play any rock and roll. But anyway, that proved to be somewhat effective, but we weren't exactly 100% pleased with those results, so we decided to test an electric barrier, which was just an electric current put in front of the outlet to act as a deterrent to those fish, and that worked much better. And so that's what we are proposing to install right in front of the tower in Rathbun Lake.
And that seems to be effective, and it, for your information, it doesn't stun or kill the fish, it just deters them.
Right. They if they get close to it, they feel it, and they swim the other way.
They're smarter than we are sometimes. You know, and speaking of the quality of fishing there, and not just the walleye, but people come through Albia, bypass other lakes to go to Rathbun. I've asked a couple of them, why do you drive so far? And it's the quality of the lake, the clarity of the lake, and the fishing. So that's encouraging.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that. You can't hardly get across the square on a Friday night because of campers and fishers. That's good news.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about the fisheries with Jay, because that's a fascinating subject as well. But stabilizing the shoreline area is an issue, and so the DNR has marked out specific areas that need solutions. Priority solutions, is that right?
That's correct. We had a research biologist years ago, Larry Mitzner, who identified, he went around the lake and kind of quantified the habitat all around the lake, and then he identified areas that were critical to spawning, and I believe it was mostly geared for crappies. But he identified these areas, and we have slowly but surely been working with the Corps of Engineers through the 1135 funding mechanism to install riprap to armor the shoreline there to prevent erosion. Erosion is a huge problem in many lakes in Iowa, but Rathbun's no different.
Yes, we've got some of those huge clay banks that just keep moving back, I noticed, and Philip Brown, you've been here since
2010,
and that was the year of
that was the second record for a high water event at Lake Rathbun.
So was that the 500 year event, or the
we don't really categorize it like that. That's more of a river type management category there, but it was the second highest on record, so it was a significant event nonetheless.
And that's when you really see erosion and
Yeah, unfortunately, when you get and in that case, or with Rathbun's case, with the way our outlet works is designed for our releases, when you get that high of a pool, our releases are relatively minimal. I've always kind of joked it's like pushing water through a straw, because it is, comparatively speaking. And so that slow drawdown, and then you get wind events, you know, with that slow drawdown, and it just pounds your shorelines, obviously, and erodes. And I mean, I don't want to put a number on it, but I know there are some areas that was, unfortunately, there was, you know, 20, 30 feet of shoreline that eroded back and cut back in, where we had maybe shelters and areas that it was obvious we were going to be impacting roads or infrastructure, core type infrastructure, not public roadways, but nonetheless, significant sloughing of the shoreline during those events when you get that high water.
Sloughing is the term.
Okay. Yeah.
See if I can remember that. Might be handy in a conversation. Sloughing. Okay. And anyway, we certainly are pleased to see that stabilized, and hopefully we won't see another year like 09 or the following year. But Philip, the Corps has, it's not a brand new, but a water management manual that's allowed you to release more.
Yeah, the new water regulation manual has a number of components to it, and we're touching on a few of them right now. But with that new water control manual, water regulation manual that was authorized in July of 2016, it updated about a 35-year-old manual that was outdated for various reasons. One was it was based on downstream capacity when it was originally designed, so our releases were constrained because it thought the channel couldn't handle it downstream. Two, of course, downstream land practices were different 40, 50 years ago. There was a lot more farming and agricultural usage of the bottoms. Now it's more, DNR has acquired quite a bit of lands down there in the Sedan Bottom area in particular, which was a major area where we'd caused backwater flooding events with higher releases. And or there's a lot of landowners down there that have enrolled in this wetland reserve program through NRCS, and that's a perpetual type commitment. So those lands, by design, want water. And so with the new water regulation manual, or with that type of land use change, I should say, that was kind of a springboard to give us the authority to go forward and get the funding to do a new manual. With that new manual, we actually made some commitments through that process. One of those was we can release more water now. However, an impact of that is the fishery. Walleye being a migratory fish, our higher releases for a more sustained period, you lose more walleye downstream. So we made a commitment to try to find a way to help fund some kind of barrier. And Jay's touched on that, of course. We've been working with the state for roughly, I'm going to say about four years, give or take, where we've been cost-sharing efforts to do, where they've done their studies to try to determine which non-physical barrier is the best, you know, the strobe lighting, the bubbler system, et cetera. And we've come to where we just finished the feasibility report about 2 months ago. And with that report, it shows that this electric barrier placed on a buoy-type system around the tower is going to be hopefully the most effective at deterring the fish loss. And then, of course, from the course perspective, we don't want to be really touching the tower, you know, and as far as attaching anything to it structurally, that can cause concern from compromising the integrity of the tower. So this is kind of a win-win in that regard. It puts that barrier to deter the fish out away from the tower, and then it doesn't impact our structure. And then, like I said, it fulfills our commitment, what we were trying to make. And then, of course, now we have the capability with higher releases under the new manual to hopefully keep a more stable reservoir condition too, and that benefits everyone else from the water quality to the recreation community, et cetera, et cetera.
It's all really tied in there. What's good for the wetlands and the wildlife is good for the fish as well, Jay?
Yeah, that's right. you know, water quality is very important for fish, and that starts in the watershed. And so the more best management practices that we can put in the watershed, it's going to keep the soil where it should be instead of going into the lake, and we're going to have better water quality in the lake, which leads to better fishing.
Better boating, better fishing, and better hunting around the area as well. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about the fish hatchery as such, and I always find that really interesting, and maybe we won't have enough time to finish this conversation, but we'll start it anyway.
Did we go that long?
Well, we're back, and I want to ask Jay Rudisill here about the fish hatchery. First off, I'm just, one of those things I'm really curious about, how long has the hatchery been in place now?
Well, the hatchery was built in the mid-70s, and I believe it was dedicated in 1977, so that puts us at 40 years old, and it's a little bit sad to say, but all of our state fish hatcheries, Rathbun at 40 years old is our newest hatchery.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. And I'm sure that it needs some improvements by now, or has had some improvements.
Yeah, we have had some improvements, but yeah, the infrastructure is starting to show its age, and we'll be having to continue to maintain and make upgrades when funding allows.
Another question, just out of curiosity, I know you catch the walleye in the spring, and milk, is that the right term or the closer? What do you call them?
That's a term that is appropriate. We usually say we spawn the fish.
Spawn the fish.
So
how many fry do you release, I guess? Or no, that's not proper because you release them at other places.
Right.
So how many fry do you produce a year?
In 2016, we produced over 78 million fry, so our hatch rate was probably right around 70%, so that meant we started out with over 100 million eggs that we incubated and hatched.
Wow, that's just an incredible number. How many make it to the lake then, approximately? What, do you have numbers for that, or?
You mean how many survive once they're stocked?
And then you can, no, how many do you put in the, you put 78 million in Rathbun and other?
We stock other lakes besides Rathbun. We target about 38 or 38 and a half million to be put into Rathbun each year. And usually we overproduce, and so usually Rathbun gets a few extras.
Gets the bonus fish there. And you release them at what size?
We stock fish, walleyes into Rathbun at two sizes, and most of the fish that we stock into Rathbun are just newly hatched fish. They're just, you know, 2 to 3 days old, and we can put many in there. Like I said, we usually put 38 to 38 and a half million in there each year. They're very cheap to produce, and there's not much effort into, you know, growing them because we stock them when they're very young. In addition to that, we stock an 8 to 10 inch fish, which we call an advanced fingerling, and every year Rathbun will get 80,000 of those in the fall. And so we stock two sizes of walleyes into Rathbun each and every year.
About now or a little earlier? About now?
About right now, yes. We do that stocking in October.
And they like the colder water. They do well in the colder water.
Yes, walleyes are considered a cool water species.
And not like trout, but...
Yeah, not like trout. They're cold water. And not like bass, they're warm water. But they're cool. They kind of like it right in the middle. Walleyes don't tend to tolerate handling very well in hot temperatures. And so... we wait till the water temperature gets to 65 or below before we start getting them out of our tanks, putting them on a truck, and then sending them off to Rathbun Lake or some other lake across the state of Iowa.
So certainly the water temperatures is just right for that. Because of the length of time that you've been researching walleye hatching at Rathbun, you're really leading the nation in some of the research, I understand.
Yes, we have our walleye culture program is the best in the nation, and a lot of that has to do with the passion and dedication of our employees, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we've researched nearly every aspect of walleye culture that there is. We've researched how to spawn them to get a good fertilization rate and get a good hatch rate. And on the other end of things, we've researched, you know, how to transport them. What are the key factors in transportation? Temperature, how many fish can we put in a tank at a time? You know, how far can we take them? What the oxygen level has to be? Many factors we've researched from beginning to end and a lot in between.
Now, I know you and I know Mark Flaming, both biologists. Where do you get training for fisheries biology? I mean, that's not a common course, I'm sure.
No, it's not that common, but there's programs in universities, you know, across the nation, and I got my training. I'm originally from Virginia, so I went to Virginia Tech, and that's where I got my start in fisheries, and I got a bachelor's degree in fisheries from Virginia Tech, and then I went further and got a master's degree at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois.
Saluki?
Go Dogs.
Yes, that does make me a Saluki.
Who are these dogs we're talking about?
That's why we get along so well. I'm a Saluki grad, too. Southern Illinois University, okay. Salukis, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we say go Cyclones here, but that's all right. It's just a matter of preference. Okay, so what are some of the things you discovered or have learned over time about walleye fisheries? What's...
Well, when I first came to work for the Iowa DNR in 2002, one of our main stumbling blocks at that point was training these walleyes to accept a pelleted diet.
So they don't come out looking for pellets, huh?
They don't come out looking for pellets. One of the things that makes walleyes difficult to culture is that they are cannibalistic. They will eat their brothers and sisters if given the chance. And so we have investigated ways to get these fish to consume a pellet. And, you know, we figured out there's three keys to success. And one is you got to start out with a fish of a certain size. They do better when they're greater than 0.5 grams, a half a gram, and that's about an inch and a half long fish. The second is a diet. We've done many diet trials over the years, and we have found a diet that is produced in Japan called the Otohime diet, and they do take to that quite well, but it is very expensive, so we only feed that for a certain period of time to get them on feed, and then we switch them over to another good quality feed that's less expensive. And then there's also the environment. Walleyes are sensitive to light. They tend to be a skittish fish, and so when we're training these fish to accept a pelleted diet, we do this in a dark room environment. Each tank does have an in-tank light, but it's not very bright, and so our workers, when they go into the dark room to take care of fish for each day, they are equipped with a headlamp so they can see what they're doing. But walleyes, when they get startled, they will zoom and swim from one end of the tank to the other, and sometimes they'll even swim into the wall and damage themselves physically.
So walleye, a grown walleye is one of the faster fish, or would you say? Who knows, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not real sure, you know, how their swimming speed compares to others.
But they're pretty speedy and fright anyway.
Oh, yes.
And shadows affect them, you say.
Yes, definitely shadows affect them. Like in the hatchery setting, a shadow can affect a fish because they perceive that as a threat. They perceive it as a predator, and so they're wanting to get away from that. And, you know, walleyes are high-level predators, so I'm sure their swimming speed is quite capable of catching a lot of prey.
Good strike speed, I guess. So in the spring, what's the biggest walleye that was netted this year?
Well, we had, you know, I'm going to blank on the weight of that fish. We did have some big ones. We had quite a few big ones. I know we had several that were over 30 inches, which would be in the, 11 to 12 pound range. And
yep.
I remember, you know, you were talking about milking fish earlier. There was one fish that we weighed, before we got the eggs out, and then we weighed it afterward. And the exact number escapes me, but that fish had over 2 pounds of eggs in its belly.
That's really productive then, huh?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, and there's so much more I'd like to talk about, but we're running out of time. But just one final thing. Talk about a little bit of the Rathbun Land and Water Alliance and their relationship with both the Corps and DNR. I think that's proven to be a really beneficial to everybody in the area.
Yeah, you bet. And they are. I don't know the exact year, the origin of the group, but the genesis of that came from Rathbun Regional Water and an importance of getting up into the watershed and working with landowners to improve their stewardship practices up in the watershed, be it with sedimentation ponds to the berming, and so forth, all with a common goal of improving the water quality, reduce the nutrient load, sediment load into the reservoir. And then that helps everything from obviously our drinking water and the process that Rathbun Regional Water has to go through to purify the water for drinking water, for potable water source, to that helps the fishery, of course, and then just water quality clarity for the average recreational person that they could care less maybe about the drinking water or the fish, but they just like the fact that when they're out boating on the lake, the water's clear, and it doesn't look like chocolate milk. So Rathbun Land and Water Alliance has had, of course, a key role, and we've all been in this together. There's, like we've touched on throughout this whole show, the partnerships between Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the Corps of Engineers, Rathbun Land and Water Alliance, Natural Resource Conservation Service, the County Conservation, et cetera, have worked very well together for many years. And we've got, everybody's got their plans still. We've still got 5, 10, 15-year plans of things and goals we want to accomplish. And so I wouldn't say we're done by any means, obviously, but accomplishing a lot of great things together.
A work in progress, but it sure is an attractive lake. It's so important to our economy here and to our lifestyle. So I appreciate your efforts, and keep that walleye fishing great there, Jay, and stripers and crappies all well known. I appreciate just the fact that it's a real magnet for the area, and we'll have to talk to you again in the spring maybe about the hatchery And Philip, of course, you're welcome here as well anytime. You have some great ideas, so I appreciate that. We'll go now to Cyclone Sideline Report. It ought to be a great show tonight. A lot of exuberance and excitement for the program.